Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm La. And welcome to the first episode of the post-Paul Walker era.
Sniff, tear wiped away.
No joke, I watched Fast and Furious 6 for the first time the morning that he died. It was actually the evening here, but it would have been the morning in the States.
So you were somehow responsible?
Definitely.
Not at all.
Well, how could he drive right if he was appearing in your movie at the same time?
No, it wasn't at the same time. He must have been fatigued from the movie. Anyway, I didn't know why I tried to jump in on that joke. I should just let it die.
No, I saw it on Twitter, and the CNN headline just said, you know, Paul Walker dead in the car crash. And I'm like, wow, really? And, you know, then you go and follow the link, and it turns out, oh, he wasn't driving, and, you know, all this other stuff, and speed wasn't a factor. But, you know, knee-jerk reaction was, wow, that's, you know, kind of not ironic, but, you know, you're just like, ah.
I think when everybody saw that headline, that was the exact same thought that we all had.
Yeah. Right, right.
Well, a lot of people thought it was a hoax, probably because of that.
I could see that, definitely. Yeah.
What's your favorite Paul Walker movie?
I'm going to have to be Fast and the Furious.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen one.
You haven't seen Fast and the Furious?
No.
It's a good flick. I mean, it's not, you know, deep at all, but it's really a fun kind of movie. It's not your kind, though, Wayne. It is definitely a don't think too much about it.
Well, I mean... Anyway, oddly enough, the only Fast and the Furious, or Wild Speed as it's known here, movie I've watched the entirety of was Tokyo Drift, the one without Paul Walker.
Huh.
Yeah, that's the worst one.
Yep.
You could watch the first one, lay the foundation, and then skip ahead to maybe, I would have said 5, but probably you need to skip to 4. Hmm.
You know,
after seeing 6,
people gave 5 a lot of credit. They said that it was pretty good, but I didn't really enjoy it all that much. But yeah, was 6 good?
Yeah, it was like 5. Like Fast and the Furious with The Rock. So
I heard from a review that The Rock spent the whole movie just like covered in baby oil. He was sweaty the whole time.
That's kind of gross.
Yeah, but when you're in WWE, is that really a big
difference? No, not at all.
Didn't they like oil themselves up? Yeah. Mm. Wasn't the story like I heard from the age of 18, The Rock has spent his life in baby oil? He's going to be in like Hercules next.
So. That's true, right? I was going to say, you know, he's no longer in the WWE, but who knows? Maybe it doesn't wash off. I don't know.
Yeah, all that baby oil.
Yeah, that wasn't baby oil. What?
The review that I watched was talking about it, and like whenever The Rock walked onto or off screen, they add in this little like squelching sound. It was hilarious.
Oh.
What are you doing, man?
Kind of disturbing.
But I mean, if you want to watch, if you don't want to watch Fast and the Furious, my favorite Paul Walker movie is Joyride.
Oh, how could I have forgotten that one? That's a great movie.
And that's with Paul Walker, Steve Zane, and what's her name? Lily Sobrinsky or Sobrisky?
Sorry.
And it's in a car, as Joyride would suggest. But it's a thriller as opposed to an action movie.
Got my pink champagne.
Yeah, it's really good. Mm. I'd recommend that to anybody who hasn't seen it. And Running Scared is also pretty good.
Not a car.
So that's a lesser known one.
Haven't seen that.
No.
It's sort of like a Bad Day, or, you know, it's kind of a Bad Day or a Bad Night. And it all takes place in that one day or night.
Yeah.
What is it? Action, yeah, it thriller, good. Horror?
Yeah, action.
Action, thriller, horror, all of them.
Comedy,
I said
everything.
Action. I went, yeah, action.
Yeah, I
wasn't
know.
Like coffee. Do you want coffee or tea? Yeah. Yes, please. Thanks. Yeah, I would say those are actually my two favorite Paul Walker movies. Lazarus Effect, it wouldn't be my favorite, but it's different. So you see a different side of him. You see a bit of his range.
Outside of the car?
Yeah, he's outside of the car.
He can walk too?
He's got legs. He's in a wheelchair, though. I don't know. No. And Varsity Blues is good, but that's more of a James Van Der Beek vehicle.
You know, when I watched the Fast and the Furious 2, I think it was one of the closest calls with death I've ever had. because when I got out of the movie, it was late at night, and all of the guys who'd seen it, you know, who were also really big into cars, they were all street racing around the parking lot, and one of them lost a little bit of control and nearly hit me. That was fun.
Really?
Yeah. It was weird. It was one of the most adult moments I had, because I was still young at the time. I don't remember how old, but it was like early 20s, maybe late teens or something like that. I just remember thinking like, oh, kids these days. And they're probably the same age as me.
Chris, old before his time.
Exactly. Quiet, you whippersnapper.
So this is back home?
Yeah, this is back in the States.
Yeah, because if that had been here, we all know Chris would have stepped up to him and caused trouble.
Yeah. Flip that car. Rawr.
Probably could flip a Japanese car. I don't know where that came
from. What are they, miniature cars?
Hey, some of the cars here are pretty small.
Yeah.
Much like the doors are also made of paper.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you know, like a Cooper Mini, when they have them here, they still look pretty mini. Mm. It's not like, oh, it's a Cooper's regular size. Same size as every other car.
It's a Cooper Monster.
Although those trucks, though, are pretty tiny, eh? With the really tiny wheels.
Yeah.
It's not so much how small the trucks are, it's just how tiny the wheels are. They're almost like a red wagon wheel.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't look like they would hold any air at all. And
yeah. We are just wandering in this. I know.
We don't actually have a topic tonight. We're just going to keep going.
Hey, and tonight's topic, Japan bashing.
And we're doing an experiment to see how far we go, see if we get a link to the actual topic. If we fail, then we just don't do the topic. Wayne and I ordered the first book of 13th Age, the only book of 13th Age.
So far.
Mm.
Yeah. I guess I was being optimistic.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, so we should get those this month.
Yeah, I was thinking, what with shipping to Japan? And yeah, you can find it on like Amazon, KoJP sometimes, but what with shipping to Japan, it usually means I really have to like something to order a physical copy of it. So, yeah.
On KoJP, it would have cost over 7,000 yen.
Oof.
It's not like we're spending that much less for it, though.
No.
With the shipping included, it's pretty dear. Mm. That's how dedicated we are.
Yeah.
All right, well, today's episode is going to be our next installment in Rogues, which is where we look at a crime and the perpetrators of the crime and talk about how to incorporate that in your game. We've done some ones in the past, such as hackers or black marketeers and our very unpopular child pornographers. So, which coincidentally was the last topic Wayne was allowed to choose.
Oh, come on.
Don't look for it on the website. The FBI took it down.
Yeah. Very difficult to squeeze out the laughs on that one. Mm-hmm. Especially the how do they do it.
Yeah. Like, oh, rough.
The methodology.
Come on. I like how I was the butt of that one. Yeah. Should I tell everyone how I am the, you know, recording this on my phone because I am now not allowed a computer? Thanks a lot, guys. Yeah.
So, well, the good part about that episode is we didn't really have to do a lot of research. We just kind of just pitched questions to Wayne. So.
Oh, what did I deserve to get chucked under the bus like this?
So, since Chris actually has a child, it'd probably be a bit grosser. Mm. So. Although you did have one, didn't you? Sorry.
I'm just waiting for this joke to die.
Well, it depends if you're meaning legitimate or not, you know?
Sorry. So like other Rogues episodes, this episode will be divided in what the crime is, why do people commit this type of crime, or why do they do it, and how do they do it. And of course, we will be making references to, I guess, famous smugglers or fictional smugglers. So you could probably guess whose name will come up maybe a few times in this episode.
If you'd like to begin the drinking game now.
So to start us off, what is smuggling? What would be the definition that we're going to work with in this episode?
Well, from what I saw online, it was basically the illegal import or transport of goods across state lines to avoid taxes or prohibitions. And by goods, that can refer to objects, currency, and, of course, people for human trafficking. Thank you, Wikipedia.
Yeah, that's pretty much the definition I was going to go on, although it could be across state lines or international lines or even within a state or, mm-hmm. or area. Basically, as you said, Chris, transporting goods or people from one area into an area or across a border which they are prohibited.
Right. And I think we'll play a little bit loosely with the illegal transportation.
Mm-hmm.
In that what we like to do with rogues is we don't necessarily want to talk about them solely as criminals and playing a criminal, because that's not for everyone's game, but also how we can take this idea and you could still play heroes in this.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's a, when you talk about human trafficking, things like that, you know, part of that is people who want to be trafficked, you know, whether it be for a better opportunity in another place to get away from oppression, like the Underground Railroad, for example, transporting people out of slavery.
That's true. And I guess I'm glad you brought that up, because from my research, the term human trafficking implies exploitation, where the term people smuggling or person smuggling mm-hmm. just implies getting them from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, people are coming across the border from Mexico to the United States, or the Underground Railroad, as you said, Chris. I think people would call that people smuggling, because once you get them across the border or wherever they're going, the person is free.
Yeah, I suppose actually going on the definition of traffic, of like dealing something, trading something illegal, I suppose if you're considering people trade, then yeah, that is kind of a on the downside, huh?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like,
yeah, I think that's the standard distinction, people mm-hmm. smuggling versus human trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, funny about the Underground Railroad, that's one of the reasons why Nova Scotia has a larger than you would think black population.
Okay.
That's where the railroad went up to.
Well, getting back to what you said at the beginning, Lyle, about, you know, not only playing smugglers as criminals, because they are breaking laws, laws can be pretty tyrannical or kind of unjust or unfair based on the setting, or in real life. I mean, you think about like a dictatorship who is, you know, denying its people something or making it difficult to get aid in, and then
right.
smuggling mm-hmm. can take on a much less evil or criminal, at least morally, aspect, because you're breaking the law specifically to help people and bring them things that they need.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Can I put a pause on that, and can we come back to that?
Sure.
Sure.
Because I think that's a really good point for why people smuggle.
Right.
And just to round out, what is smuggling, the things that they do? Of course, people are smuggled, either willingly or unwillingly. Wildlife.
Right.
And goods are the main things that people smuggle. And of course, goods from cigarettes to jeans and Soviet, like the Soviet Union, to, of course, drugs, guns,
mm-hmm.
and wildlife. Actually, Wikipedia has a picture of a guy who's smuggling rare birds on his legs.
Yeah, it took me a while to figure out what that them. Picture was. Looks like
was he flying across the border?
No, no, it looks like...
Via the birds.
It looks like he's got small cardboard tubes taped around his legs, and then you realize, oh, there are birds stuffed inside each one.
Oh, jeez. Poor birds.
Yeah, well, as much as you can sell them for, who cares if some of them die when you're getting across?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so those are the main things, but getting back to what Wayne was talking about, yeah, it can be in opposition to just laws or unjust laws.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty classic example is prohibition.
Right.
And where you side on that. So, I think in the Untouchables, I wonder if that was set in the 30s or if it was set in the 20s. When did prohibition end in the States?
I think it was probably...
It started in the 20s, but I don't remember when
it
finished.
Yeah, I know it didn't last that long. So, probably by the 30s it was done, I think.
I think the Untouchables happened just before I think in the early 30s.
Okay.
Because at the end of the movie, which of course is historically accurate, they ask Kevin Costner or Elliot Ness, what do you think about the idea that they're going to repeal prohibition? And he goes, well, I think I'll get a drink. So, and of course Canada didn't have it, so they were still making whiskey, which they would send down to the south.
What I thought was kind of interesting is that before, you think about smuggling now, and the one of the first thing that pops into your head is drugs.
Han Solo. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. All right, everybody drink. Everybody drink.
I think.
All right. No, but drugs.
What about when we say drugs? Should they do something else?
If, you know what? I will not pass judgment if people do, but I am not saying they should. Right. But, like, prior to drugs being the thing that was most often smuggled, it was alcohol. Mm-hmm. And
cigarettes?
Yeah, cigarettes, alcohol, and tobacco.
That would be the tobacco tax thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And...
That's a huge... I mean, cigarettes are still smuggled quite a bit.
Right, and for some reason, I didn't kind of put together the we want to evade tax and duty on these things. You know, you think of smuggling and it's illegal things you're bringing into a country, guns and drugs and whatnot. But yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting and makes a lot of sense if you, you know, smuggle in a high tax item, which you can sell for then a lot less than what it's currently being charged and still make a profit.
Well, that's actually a really good point, Wayne, that it's not only illegal goods, it's legal goods that are brought in illegally.
Right.
Yep, absolutely. Or it could even be avoiding some sort of regulation or check. So just about any gun known to man is legal in some capacity in the United States. But there's different laws in different states. So I could see people... I mean, that's one of the problems with the Chicago handgun laws is it's unenforceable because people just easily smuggle them in. And they don't even have to try really hard either. So you can't control that. So that's why... when people say, well, look at all the gun crime in Chicago, and they have the toughest gun laws, and you're like, well, that's because you can't stop it. Mm-hmm. You'd have to ban it over a larger area.
Right.
And you wouldn't be able to stop it, but at least you could slow it. So,
no, I read that, I don't know if that happened before independence, but I know that after American independence, yeah, places in the South around, like Georgia and Louisiana, were primary places where goods were smuggled in and out of the country to avoid, you know, taxation. But a lot of that fell off after free trade laws went into effect. There was a quote I was trying to find about someone saying the more something is, like, not taxed, but the more something is tried to be restricted, the more it's just going to be smuggled. But
the more that makes sense. I mean, it's more incentive. It's like the more incentive you give people to do something, the more they'll do it.
Right.
Because they can make more of a profit.
Exactly. If it's only very lightly illegal, then it's still easy to get a hold of it somehow. But if it's really cracked down upon, then it becomes a really rare kind of good and thus really profitable.
But I think Wayne makes a good point in that if you are going to have smuggling in your game, there has to be some sort of economy or economics at work there.
Right.
And that it has to be, like, the potential trade-off has to be bigger than... just doing it like normally. So it has to be like something that's completely prohibited. Mm. So you can charge a lot, or it's something where there is a high tax and you can conceivably make a profit on there. Perhaps the penalty is lower and things like that. But without that working behind the scenes, like, then you're not going to really have a smuggling. Even if you have the human trafficking, because I mean, if you're human trafficking or the people smuggling, there's some sort of economics going on there. There's a sex trade going on that you're rescuing people from. Well, there's a sex trade that you're feeding.
Right.
You know.
I think, like, in general, you're right, Lab, but I disagree with you a little bit. I don't think there necessarily has to be an economic incentive behind it, as long as it's not a taxation, but a prohibition kind of thing. For example, if you imagined a kingdom that banned all weapons to it, people would still smuggle in weapons, even if it's not for trade. It's because people wanted weapons.
True, but I think since we're talking
I don't want to say like that you're wrong kind of thing, because you're absolutely right. And if there is any kind of economy whatsoever, then of course those weapons are also going to be very profitable, especially in a place with prohibition on it. But just not to say that it doesn't have to be an economy 100%.
Right. No.
Well, you could have the meeting of ideology and economics, but at somebody in that transaction, somebody is valuing weapons more than the money, so they're buying these weapons. Mm-hmm. They might be valuing the weapons because they're killers, they're drug dealers, or they could be rebels, revolutionaries. Like, who's supplying the rebels in Star Wars? Well, yeah, take a drink. with X-Wings and B-Wings. I always thought that was a very elaborate industry that they had there. They didn't have, like, knockoff TIE fighters. They have their own starships and starfighters that are better. Anyway, but somebody's got to be making some money to do that. It's not a cheap... Well, it's not super expensive, but you do need vehicles or something going on to make it worth your while.
That's what I took you to mean when you said economy, Lyle. I said, okay, someone is going to profit from this activity, smuggling. most often the smuggler. And I was thinking more in terms that the reward the smuggler gets mm-hmm. from bringing these items across the border has to be at least equal to, if not greater than, the risk they're facing by bringing it across the border. That mm-hmm. that's kind of what I took it to mean when Lyle said economy. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the entire country, there has to be this monetary, you know, economic system in place that the goods or the people or whatever then gets fed into. There's this own little self-contained economy of, I'm providing you something you need and you are rewarding me for it.
Mm-hmm. Smuggler can go both ways.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you take the ideology out of it again and just they smuggle things back and forth until they reach that point where they have the maximum item, you know, the most profitable item. So they bring guns in to get people, they bring people back to get this, push, keep going back and forth.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good way that you can put kind of the smuggling into perspective for building a character in a game. Is look at the kind of ideology that you're holding. You know, are you doing this for a cause? Are you doing this to help people out? Or are you doing it for the money?
Obviously money.
No, I mean, that's it. And I guess the ideologue would always be, you know, scraping money together just to get by, just to, you know, break even. Because, I mean, they're doing it for the cause, whereas the other person just collecting the money, and then you have a nice story there that perhaps they can change. And I guess that brings up the Han Solo story arc. Whoa, take a drink. Where he is doing it only for the money, and then he switches over to doing it for the cause, using his skills.
Mm-hmm.
So then you can have that as your backstory, you know, reformed smuggler or not. So there's still a smuggler, whereas, you know, reformed rapist, or it's hard to like have them still do that as a hero, whereas a smuggler can still use their skills for the greater good.
Right. Not going down that other path you set up, but
no, right.
Maybe even like reformed murderer, you can still say, oh, and he uses his or her skills
to catch other
for
murderers.
The greater good. You know, it's like, oh, now I'm a good assassin. You're like, okay, that makes sense.
So you're playing Dexter, kind of.
Yeah, I suppose. Wow. Yeah.
Now, I was going to say a little bit hair-splitty, but is Han Solo still a smuggler after he kind of teams up with the Rebel Alliance? Yeah, I don't know.
Well, they're rebels, so I would imagine that there was a whole smuggling operation going on there.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of smuggling they needed done. That said, I don't know if he actually did any of it.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
But, no, what you're saying is still there. Like, his skills will still be in use, even if he isn't actually still smuggling things once he kind of switches over. But
Well, even in Return of the Jedi, he smuggles the people on the Millennium Falcon.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Never thought I'd have to smuggle myself in these.
Oh, like, yeah.
That was in the first
one. That
was
in the first one.
Yeah.
And then Return of the Jedi, they steal that Imperial shuttle. And I guess that kind of raises the question that they weren't really smuggling. That was the precursor to an invasion.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's what I was saying before with you guys is, you know, does the Trojan horse count as smuggling? But not really, huh?
When you first did that, I thought you were talking about the, like, hacking or, like, a virus.
No, the actual horse.
I thought you were talking about the computer program. All right.
No.
Yeah. But one thing that I take issue with the Trojan horse is they didn't really move it. They just sort of filled it up and left it.
And hoped someone else moved it.
The Trojans kind of brought it in. So, which is pretty clever, but
yeah, I think
it's
that's
a clever
the best
way to
kind of
them.
Smuggling when you get somebody else to do it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could put like a suitcase and convince somebody else to take it over for you, which smugglers do. Yeah. So I suppose we should get into how do people smuggle, since we've just touched on that.
Well, okay, since that's the way that we talk about it, that's one of the most evil ways is to get or to trick someone else into doing the smuggling for you.
Yeah.
What is it? What's the name of that TV show? There's a TV show. I think it's maybe Incarcerated Abroad or Captured Abroad or something along those lines, where it's stories about people who, like Americans or kind of Western people who've been jailed in countries, you know, like Iran or Thailand or something like that, where the prison situations aren't very good. But almost all of them, their stories are, you know, I was just going to go on vacation there and somebody said, I'll give you $500 to just, you know, stick this in your back pocket.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, and I have never heard of that TV show. But
I can't remember the name of it, but
I haven't heard of the TV show, but there's certainly a lot of stories, because there was at least one famous example in Japan about somebody who's incarcerated, maybe Australia, maybe British, and their story is that they didn't know they were smuggling drugs.
Not quite as
ridiculous as what Chris is saying. I'm not saying that...
It isn't that ridiculous. People actually will walk up
to the example
say,
I'm thinking of is not as ridiculous as what you're saying, as in, or your examples, probably be a better way to put that. It was a switcheroo, I think.
Locked up abroad.
I'll have to check that out, because it sounds kind of interesting.
But... Yeah, I mean, you do have to watch your bags, of course, but I mean, that is one way to do it, is get somebody else to be the smuggler.
Right. That seems like it would involve a lot of, well, not a lot, I guess, compared to other modes or ways of doing it, but if you don't know who you are going to get to carry your goods across the border, I imagine it would be kind of difficult to have someone ready to pick up those goods on the other side, wherever they needed to go. So
I don't know. In the days of international phone calls, you just call up your receiver and describe the person to him.
I suppose that's very true. All right.
Yeah.
It's certainly become easier.
Yeah.
You're right. There is a calculated risk in doing that, that, you know, the person might not be able to deliver or something like that, but it's far less than you yourself getting caught, hey?
Right. And that is the upside to that, yeah. You may have lost a shipment of whatever, but you're still in business to continue sending those shipments across the border, and it probably will not get back to you.
Even worse is some of the situations where it's not where people will offer them to carry a suitcase for $500, but people will meet folks in another country, and these people that they've just met, they're really friendly and everything, and they invite them to stay at their place and have them throw these huge parties for them and buy them all kinds of wonderful stuff, and then at the very end say, all right, now we bought you all this thing for this week, so now you owe us, and you have to pay it back, and we'll have big scary guys there to make sure that they actually do it.
I'm sure that works, but I have to wonder who, I don't know, maybe I'm just cynical. Who agrees to like go to these people's houses and that they've just met and anyway.
Don't get me wrong. It's these don't seem like the most intelligent of people.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that the smugglers intentionally look for people who this would work on. So
yeah, and for the people for a target that might be too smart to just take a bag, there's always blackmail.
Mm.
Yeah, steal their passport or something like that and say, you got to carry this for me if you want it back.
Oh, there's a. I've probably seen this in a movie, certainly not my own idea, but I mean, using like their family,
right,
and extorting their cooperation through that. Like you say, oh, here's your family on the phone, mommy, who's this man in here? And they're like, okay, well now they're gonna do it. So, and of course they do have willing accomplices, mules. Yeah. I think that might be the drug vernacular,
right.
And they might carry that, like swallowing things, carrying it inside their body. Other things, if you've watched Jackie Brown, you get somebody who's working on flights, like a flight attendant or a pilot, and then they do the smuggling because they might, go through security a lot more quickly or a lot more easily.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes sense.
And I suppose it's not surprising, but a lot of smuggling does take place on commercial flights.
Again, not being a smuggler and not really knowing how they do it, but
I'm just going to spitball here, just imagine.
Yeah. Not based on my own experience, mine, but it seems like commercial flights, what with the large volume of people they deal with, that is a factor, It's like, you can't check everybody. And so, much like sending someone across carrying your goods, blending in with this large group of people, you've just increased your odds of not getting caught just through the sheer volume of people that they have to check.
It's a numbers game. And but also a big part of it is cost as well. Lyle was mentioning about the economics earlier.
I was going to say that, but I don't want to
sound like
it.
Why buy your own plane when somebody else can fly for you?
Right.
Well, I was talking about all the costs, all the trade-offs that are involved there. Because you actually can check everybody.
Yeah.
But it's a trade-off because then you lose business. Mm.
Yeah,
you're the airline that checks everybody,
mm-hmm.
and it takes forever to get on the flight, and you got to reduce the number of flights you have. And that might be something to work into the game, not only from the smuggler's end, but for the border authorities or the police or whatever you have checking, is that it's a trade-off for them. I mean, you don't want to make it where that the roads are airtight, these people get tired, they're not going to be up 24/7, you know. You know, so there's a trade-off. They're not going to stop everybody that's going into the town. They're going to stop every fifth person or whatever.
Right.
And if they have a pattern, that's something that the players can use. If they don't have a pattern, then that's something that the players can con.
Right. No, I was thinking, like, when you guys were talking about the you know, rather unintelligent people who are either duped or blackmailed or otherwise coerced into being mules or whatever else the term is for non-drug smuggling. Of course, we're talking about a game here. I was thinking that those situations would be great for the face character, mm-hmm. or the kind of, you know, person with a medical or psychology kind of background, because then you have to go and interact with this person and figure out, oh, okay, you know, this is the kind of person we would want, because, you know, they're not going to ask questions, or they, you know, they think everything is on the up and up, or they figure out, okay, well, this is the kind of person we don't want, because they're probably going to ask questions and they might catch on to what's going on. So yeah, thanks and bye. And that would be a way to bring, you know, the face character, who also may or may not be a smuggler, but might just be part of the team, give them kind of a scene to flex their muscles.
That's a good point about the team, because you can have the con man, the face man, face person, con person.
Well, yeah, especially if you get into modern smuggling operations, I mean, you really do need the whole team of people to do it.
Right.
Because, I mean, if you get somebody to load some, to take something on, you might need a tough guy there to intimidate them. Or you might need like some kind of a grifter or something to trick them into it if just conning them isn't going to work.
Right.
Conning is tricking them. But also you need people who are on the other side too, you know, to meet them when they get off of the plane. And I was reading that one of the ways that is more common now that airlines are using more psychological profilers, one of the ways that smugglers are getting around it is they'll put the drugs or diamonds or whatever smuggling item secretly into somebody's bags without them knowing it, so that they can get past people without having to lie, because they don't even know about it themselves.
Right.
And then once they get out of the airport, then the rest of the smuggling team will just mug them and take all their bags.
Hmm.
Yeah. Another member of the team can be the, well, touching on what Wayne was saying, where he's the person that does the profiling.
Mm-hmm.
But like, yeah, like a psychological profiler, or that very, very clever guy that has all the, or woman, that has all the angles, where they, or even the accountant.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That is able to see, well, this person's in debt. The hacker who would find out the financial information.
Right.
Like, so you can have some very, very intelligent people. Mm-hmm. And as Chris was saying, some very, very brutal people.
Mm-hmm.
And combined, they make a really effective team. But you now have this roguish group with a common goal, but they're very divergent. And you can have a lot of very natural clash, because you could, you know, play the stereotypes that, you know, no honor among thieves.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that makes a really dynamic group. So.
Yeah.
Or you just play up the fact that different people are going to want to go at a problem different ways. You know, the person who normally mugs the individual after they get through customs or whatever is probably just going to want to, you know, go through and be a bit more straightforward, whereas the psychological profiler might want to do things, you know, a lot more covertly.
Yeah. I want to play the tough guy. Let's mug him.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I think we understand. No, let's mug him.
Yeah, how did I know you would want to play the tough guy?
Could be some good give and take there, because, yeah, the person thinks, well, the simplest approach is always the best approach. Mm. There's less, you know, less things that can go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the clever person is like, well, then, you know, the simplest approach is also most dangerous, because it's more direct. They'll see who we are. But, you know, we have less leverage. And just that clash, and it's like, which one's going to work in each different scam?
Hmm.
Which one's the best approach? So,
I could see a group of smugglers being really interesting to play.
Yes.
Or not.
No, I agree. I'm just trying to think of how to say it, how to agree. I think that, you know, smuggling is one of those professions that is high risk, and, you know, for in the case of a game, you know, it's very high action. There's always a chance for you to be discovered if you're keeping it covert, and if you are discovered, then it just kind of gets even more exciting. It suddenly a chase begins, or You have to start dodging the authorities, which is another chase. I'm really repeating myself tonight.
Or you just get caught and end up in jail and the game ends.
Well, sure, yeah. Yeah. But then there's a jailbreak.
Or you find someone to smuggle you stuff into the jail.
Hey, there you go. You start your operation again from inside. Brilliant.
Well, a previous rogue episode, actually our first rogues episode, the Black Marketeer, is again like a perfect team member with the smuggler because, I mean, they complement each other. One person is delivering the goods in a sense or selling the goods, and the other person is actually transporting the goods. So, of course, there's the wheelman, or moving on to the vehicles, the person that is the drives the car, flies the plane, or the boat, which is very very common,
right?
Including the, I guess, the amply named Go Fast Boat.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty clever name too.
Yeah, I prefer Rum Runners. So
yeah,
have you ever been to TGI Fridays and they have the Rum Runner?
No. I have been to TGI Fridays. I've not had a Rum Runner.
Yeah, same here.
It's not bad.
Oh, hold on. I agreed with Chris. Oh, well.
That you universe haven't ended. Had a Rum Runner. Is that agreeing?
I guess not.
Right, that you have the same experience?
I have never been to the moon. How about you, Wayne?
Oh, I'm agreeing with him again. Oh,
no.
We're both born in the States. Will I do
that? No, but going back to vehicles, one of the things I read... A way to avoid, you know, lines and security guards and things like that is to just use remote airstrips. You know, they're closer to the interior of a country. Of course, you would have to, logistically, you would have to find one of those either abandoned airstrips or, you know, find some rich person whose airstrip you can use or build one. But... that's another way to do it rather than having to deal with security.
Oh, that's old school, man. All the new age drive traffic is they just use drones, so you don't need an airstrip, you just need a backyard.
Is that where Amazon learned it from, or
probably. Well, there was a
there's one thing. Amazon, you hijack an Amazon drone, put your stuff in it. So you order something from Amazon, and you order like books and then they hijack it, put the drugs inside and goes along its way.
Or you just build your own. Maybe a little easier.
Or you could just walk there.
while we're killing Lyle's idea, how about you just walk there and not use drones at all?
The thug is like, why don't we just walk there? It's like, no. Okay, we get the drone with this laser. Sorry, go on.
One of the things I saw online was that over the past decade or so, the Mexican drug cartels have actually built their own cellular network across all of Mexico that has like its own encrypted communications lines that the government can't get access. So they're just using that to fly their own drones around.
Why don't why doesn't the Mexican government take down the towers? Or?
Because the cartels are more powerful than the government.
Oh, okay.
Once again, you used deflated Lyle.
Why are they making their own towers? Why don't they just use the government's towers since, hey, you can't stop us?
Well, that's a good point. Why don't they just storm all of the other government cell transmission towers and take
why
them
does Why does Mexico have a government?
Actually, that's a very good question.
Why do we not have any Mexican listeners? Oh, I know why.
Because we don't do it in Spanish?
All right. All right.
A lot of Mexicans can speak English.
I know. Huh. I was just deflating somebody else.
Now, how do we get to Mexico when we're talking about smuggling?
Oh, let's get back on it. Han Solo.
Of course, there are the vehicles that have the false bottoms or the false panels, like in the car, made famous in Millennium Falcon, where they hid in that little compactor, or those little compartments at the bottom of the boat.
Yeah, we never really found out what he smuggled in there, did he?
Yeah.
But we do know it was large enough for people to hide in.
Oh, yeah.
It probably wasn't people, because he said that he dropped his shipment before, and that's why he was in trouble with Jabba. I hope it wasn't.
But that doesn't
people.
Mean they weren't
yeah,
people.
Yeah, exactly. Lyle beat me to it. Doesn't mean they weren't people, just means they were all...
It just got a lot darker.
Yeah, think about it.
He did shoot first.
He did. He did shoot first. Imagine if, in that scene in Star Wars, Luke and Obi-Wan pop up from that one thing and be like, yeah, you got a whole bunch of, oxygen tanks and rebreathers down here in these cargo compartments. What are you Oh.
There's that cut scene from the first movie where Han's like, yeah, I don't know why it was so packed with the four of us in there. Usually I can fit Never mind. Emperor has a taste for something.
Jeez.
Well, actually, he probably did. I mean, you would imagine Jabba the Hutt did smuggle people.
I mean,
traffic people.
Like we talked about in the beginning, I'm sure the Rancar ain't native to Tatooine. How did he get that thing in there? Smuggling wildlife.
That dancer that he ate.
The Twi'lek, yeah.
Did he eat her or did he throw her in the pit?
The Rancar, yeah.
Oh, okay. I meant Jabba. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Jabba only ate frogs.
Yes.
Who were also probably not indigenous to the planet.
Right. Imagine, smuggling a hut and be like, wow, there's no way to hide that. You just bribe the guy. He's like, oh, I don't see anything in there.
Well, that is, you
pay no attention to the back of the truck. Oh,
yeah. What's the slime trail coming out the back of this transport?
Yeah, why is the back so low?
No, but you bring that up, Lyle. Smuggling is transporting, goods illegally, but that doesn't mean you have to avoid security. You could bribe them, as you said, just to kind of look the other way. I think the point of a smuggler is they get things from point A to point B across a border where those things are illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not very interesting to just simply bribe a couple guards on the way, or not very exciting for a game, but that is one way to do it.
Yeah, we were talking about it before, we have the thug approach, punch the guard, the con man approach, the accountant approach,
The accountant approach with lots of money, here's lots of money, please look the other way.
Oh, yeah, I mean, the accountant could be like, you now have $10,000 in your bank account. Where'd that come from? And he goes, it doesn't matter. Mm. It's in there now, and people are going to find it if I make one phone call.
Right.
You explain it. Mm. So that reminds me of the Horus Heresy book Nemesis.
I don't think I read that one.
It's pretty good. It deals with the assassins. And special to that book is this assassin order that's all about data.
Hmm.
And he takes out a planetary ruler who's corrupt by manipulating transactions so that his accomplices think that he's skimming money from them or stealing money from them, so they kill him.
Hmm.
And that's how he does it. And I thought that was really, really clever.
Well,
and it made what could have, it does it swordfished that type of character. Swordfish takes the hacker and kind of makes it semi-glamorous.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
Put it in a Hugh Jackman body.
Hmm.
And this takes, these accountant guys or these data manipulators and makes it a really dynamic, a really exciting kind of way to go about it and way to assassinate somebody.
Well, you mentioning data reminded me that, when you talk about smugglers, we usually think about going across, either state or international or other kind of geographic borders like that. But smuggling could also be the removal of classified or otherwise restricted documents just from a building.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right, Wayne. It's kind of getting a fine line into spying there, but
or stealing. But yeah. But yeah, you could say that.
Lyle, back me up on this. You probably know this better than I do. I think it was either ancient Rome or ancient Greece, but they would steal information by getting it tattooed to their heads and then letting their hair grow out. Have you heard this story before?
For pirates, but I don't know about the Greeks or the Romans doing that.
I could,
but I'm not saying they didn't do that.
I'm probably wrong anyway. But anyway,
take a while, wouldn't it?
That's what I was thinking.
I imagine so. Yeah, but if you're talking about ancient Greek and Romans, communication wasn't exactly that fast anyway. But it was where they would tattoo information to the tops of their heads and let their hair grow out so they could smuggle the information into other countries.
If you take that. Yeah, I thought the same thing, Lyle. Oh, man, you couldn't have brought this information to me, 6 months earlier? Oh, I had to wait for my hair to grow. Oh, well, kind of useless now.
But the barbarians are going to attack. You think?
Yeah.
But it's already here.
If you're going to walk from Athens to Sparta or something, your hair might grow along the way. I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, long
enough. You got to wear a hat. And then you're like, oh, I could have just worn the hat the whole time. Oh, I could have just put it under the hat. Nobody looked. Yeah. Or I could have just had it in a piece of paper.
But that reminded me of, Johnny Mnemonic, where you take that to a sci-fi setting, and, if you do have, the technology to grow limbs or hair or body parts or tattoos really fast, well then, putting it on the body could be an effective way to transport it.
Mm-hmm. They did it in a Firefly episode, too, once, where there was genetically modified organs, and a guy had them implanted into his body, and he was carrying them.
Right. I remember that one, yeah.
I think I saw that. Well, actually, I've seen all the Firefly episodes, so I probably did see that one.
Yeah, well, you also said you didn't like it very much. Oh, you probably
should. You know, I said it was okay, and I guess for Firefly fans...
Okay, ain't good enough.
Yeah, I guess so. I was like, oh, you don't love it?
No. I am actually really surprised. I think it's one of the best TV shows ever, but... Really? So I am surprised that you didn't, you only thought that it was okay. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Movie. I don't know if you ever got around to watching it, Chris, but it's certainly a movie Wayne and I like, and that's Looper.
Oh, yeah.
No, I haven't. I have it rented currently, but I haven't watched it yet.
One clever way they use time travel is to write something on the present self person's body, and it appears on the future self's person's body.
Yeah, but it's not exactly writing. It's scarification.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, sorry. Yeah, not in a sharp...
Yeah.
Yeah. More like cool. A sharp knife.
I can see future self. Ah, why did she use the Sharpie? There's nothing here.
Yeah, it'll be like, why is this still on? Did I not wash my arm? What is this?
Oh, imagine that. That'd be kind of funny. You know, your arm would be completely, like, grimy and dirty. You're like, oh... Couldn't have, you know, carve it. I understand now why we carve it in and don't use Sharpie, because it's not washing thing.
They never shower.
Yeah. That was pretty clever, the way they did that. Of course, that brings up the thing of time travel, and if, you know, you have a setting with time travel, then I'm sure there are going to be time smugglers, you know.
Whoa, Wayne. Wow, cool. You just opened Pandora's box. That's cool. That's awesome. Yeah, think about smuggling future technology back into the past. Or smuggling goods from the past into the future when they might be more valuable.
Right.
I don't remember what the movie was, but I remember one where there were time travelers who would travel back to like the time when the Spaniards were in Mexico taking gold from the Aztecs and whatnot. So there was lots of gold being traded around, and only people with, you know, low technology swords and muskets protecting it. So they showed up with machine guns and just took hordes of gold off of the Spaniards, brought it back into the future when gold is worth 20 times the... then, and yeah.
But if they can afford time machines, why do they need...
Well, I think the idea is this time technology already exists. We didn't, like, build it specifically to go back and... Okay, that seems like a pretty dumb idea. Okay, we're going to build a time machine to go back in time and steal gold. And how much will this cost? Well, we'll have enough gold from the past to break even. Let's rethink this plan.
Yeah, you don't want to think too much about that. Okay, if people are going to pass to take gold, what happens to the economy?
That could be a really fun campaign, though, like playing either time smugglers or the people chasing after the time smugglers.
That would always be catch-up, because it's not like you can stand in a time tunnel and like check people coming through.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose you go to the time machine ports, if they are, which reminds me, you can also do teleporting.
Mm-hmm.
And how you would have to manipulate the machines, because if they're only teleporting it, you know, you carefully analyze the person, so it might be a lot of bribery there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that they're not only teleporting the person, they're teleporting the illegal goods.
Oh, yeah. Expanded with all kinds of future technology, you can also put in more fantasy elements, like trying to smuggle in magic. I think a fun campaign might be people smuggling spells in and out of a restricted area. You know,
a way to make Numenera more interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, that's why they don't have those robots in this area, because, you know, they have the barriers, trade barriers or whatever. So then you could be smuggling, you're trying to equalize everything, smuggling the different tech, the different nanos.
Mm, yeah. But yeah, that'd be really fun. I imagine like a kingdom that doesn't allow evocation things. There's no fireball or magic missile spells, so you could make a lot of money bringing those in.
Well, I wasn't thinking smuggling spells, but that's a really, you know... be interesting thing to do. I would imagine they would have to smuggle in, like, scrolls, or because otherwise you're, well, not necessarily, you could smuggle in the person, you know, the magic user to...
Can you hear that? Can you hear that? That's the sound of a hair splitting.
All right.
He says spells, and he goes, well, I'm not sure about spells. Like, scrolls, yeah. With spells on them.
Yes, or the people with the spells in their mind. Yeah. No, I was going a different place.
But then they forget you, and then you trick them to say it, and then they're like, oh, I can't remember.
No. You just, if you're playing in D&D, you just wait for the wizard to empty all his spells, then transfer him across the border, because his spell slots are empty, then he sleeps on the other side.
Sleep.
And then they're all there again.
Oh, I remember it again. Yeah. No, but he's got to study. Hey, you got to give him the book back.
No, I was thinking...
Oh, that's how you get him to do it.
Yeah, you bribe him with the book.
Steal the spell book.
Yeah.
And said, you'll get this back on the other side.
Yeah.
So you give him the book, and then he writes scrolls.
Okay.
And he has to pass himself off as a smuggler.
Brilliant, yeah. You know, I've played in campaigns before where...
Why didn't we grow up in a fantasy world? Because I think we got a pretty good racket going on.
I played in campaigns before where things like the whole city was controlled by the churches, so they only allowed clerics. They didn't allow any regular magic users. You could have a lot of fun, you know, with human, not human trafficking. What was it? People smuggling?
People smuggling.
Yeah. Like to get spellcasters either in for some kind of revolution, rebellion thing, or out because they're in danger from the church.
Right.
Or you can traffic them. So a crime lord wants their pet mages.
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. Like, if you're going kind of the good route, then, people smuggling. If you're going kind of the, obviously, evil route, well, then people trafficking, and you're bringing mages into the city.
Yeah.
Well, you could go to the gray route, where you realize you're creating, like a perfect storm, or perhaps a catalyst for chaos, in that you're trafficking in these wizards, because there's a demand for them, so you're making a lot of money, but you also realize you're starting to build that critical mass.
Mm-hmm.
Within the city, that there's more of these mages, and that soon something's going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
And it's going to bring everybody down.
Sorry, before we went off on the idea of smuggling the actual mages or spellcasters, then I was thinking, just if you have magic in the world, then like any other setting, that's your technology. And how easy would it be to smuggle in goods when you've cast an invisibility spell on it?
Well, but then again, on the counter of that, the law enforcement probably has various kinds of detect or barrier spells as well.
Well, true, and then it just becomes like tech, and then it becomes kind of like, magical, not hacking, but it's like, okay, well, we have, these spells at our disposal to help us avoid detection, and let's hope they work against, whoever we're trying to slip past, and their spells to detect things,
My caution there is that just be careful if it becomes too fantastic or too technologically advanced, then the smuggling might even become pointless or just not very exciting. Like, imagine smuggling in a Star Trek world.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're like, well, we got a replicator here. Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, you're not too far off reality with that, Lyle. That's what I was about to say a minute ago, is that we're starting just now with 3D printing being a reality in this world. And you can print with anything, plastic, cement, metal, and it won't be too long before you can do it with biology, too. You could print food, things like that. Once we get there with it, there won't be a need for smuggling. If you want a cigarette, you just need the raw materials for it, which are growing all around you. And, it just prints them for you.
I'm going to disagree slightly. Because
all right, well, go ahead.
Going back to the beginning, what you said, smuggling... I agree. Smuggling is pointless if there's not a demand for the item being smuggled. And I think that if we do develop like replicators or compilers or, fabbers, whatever they call them in Eclipse phase, I think we'll just be smuggling something else, either like handmade goods or people or perishables like food that are not made by those 3D printers.
That's a really good point. Once we, get these synthetic meats and things working, how expensive will a real steak become by comparison?
Exactly. I think there will always be something to smuggle. It will just not be the things that are typically smuggled now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it could be smuggling in the stuff that you need to make it.
Yes,
so
yes.
The replicator could have things that, you can't put heroin on the replicator because it's disabled.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the data to add to the replicator that it can then
make heroin.
Make heroin. Right. And secretly, because you would smuggle that data in, then you upload it. You're talking about you can make biological parts, but the government now restricts the basic stuff that you need to make it.
Yeah, they handled that really well in Eclipse Phase, and they said that all of the kind of big weapons of mass destruction, they always incorporated some kind of element that was either really difficult to come by or really difficult to produce. So that way, if somebody was trying to get that element in order to build these things, then it would be... easy to be stopped by the government.
Right, or I've seen settings where, you have to have a specific ID to be able to access, the plans to produce certain things. And in that case, the smuggling of, either the person to activate this thing or the ID, or the smuggling of a cracked Faber unit would be good business.
Or maybe that's where your hacker team comes in.
Hmm.
In the smuggling group. Because, you know, there's also not to say that maybe these things aren't so difficult to produce in this kind of world, but they may still be illegal. It's not easy to carry them around or use them.
That's true. But I think, like, if you kind of get... Again, this being the episode about smugglers, I think if you don't have to physically transport the object from point A to point B, you're not really a smuggler anymore.
So do you bring the 3D printer along with you? Do you print it at a specific location and then smuggle that thing? Not smuggle, but bring it to the customer. There's risk in either.
We already said that you could actually be involved in a smuggling operation without actually physically transporting it by getting somebody else to do it.
True.
So if you're arranging the transportation, then that would be smuggling. But yeah, I mean, it does cross over into, if all you are is on the receiving end selling the goods, then you're a black marketeer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you're hacking into something and getting data and everything is electronic, then yeah, you want to call that smuggling, sure, but you're really a hacker.
Right.
Yeah. And if you want more information on either of those two roles, check out our other Rogues episodes.
Hey, how did that happen?
I like that little announcer voice you did there, Chris.
Why, thank you.
Another way to smuggle is to smuggle the actual vehicles themselves. That could be a lot of fun because it's not so much about being secret. It's about being fast and evading.
Hmm.
So
back to Fast and the Furious. So,
yeah, you could do the Fast and Furious, and you're smuggling those cars. You're thinking about who got the B-Wings or the X-Wings to the Rebels.
Mm. Yeah. They had to fly them there some way.
Yeah. That could be interesting. Smuggling, another good aspect about smuggling is that something can go wrong on the journey. And because it is transportation, it is a journey, so it can turn into a very, very fast-paced game, like a chase game. And then it creates a dilemma for the players in that at a certain point you got to let it go, or right. do you keep having this thing that even if it's not kind of holding you back and slowing you down, if you get caught with it, they'll kill you. If you get rid of it and they catch you, they might go, I guess he's not the one or she's not the one. So
yeah, and actually,
or you kind of could have something that when you talk about the weapons of mass destruction, where it actually could be pretty good to use it to protect yourself, but then you lose a profit because it has limited charges or that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It could be an evil item. Going back to the supernatural, that would corrupt whoever used it. I mean, you don't care personally as a smuggler, but then, should I use it now to save my skin?
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and actually branching off of that, Lyle, talking about smugglers, you know, is moving goods from one place to another. So it has a potential to be a really varied campaign that you can see all kinds of different locations in the course of a single adventure.
Yeah.
And over the course of a campaign, enormous amount.
That's a good point.
Or you could be smuggling mystery items that you get from the person you work with, and hey, it's moving. Open the trunk, open the back. Oh, it's people.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
What do you? I mean, you've seen that. You've seen that in a few movies, and then you have that dilemma: do you betray the person that you work with, your accomplice, or do you free these people? You know, do you go ahead and do it? Just deliver them?
Or do you fall in love with the traffic?
Yeah, of course.
Right.
Of course. No, I think...
Sorry, the first movie that came to mind when you said, when it's moving, was The Transporter.
Oh, all right. No, I think the playing a smuggler game, you do have the added wrinkle, as you said, Lyle, of do you dump this shipment or do you use it to help you get away, possibly? And then have, in either case, have nothing to sell once you're on the other side. Or, you know, do you keep going and risk trying to make it to actually have something to sell or get across the border?
Yeah, and I mean, some rogues are just bad people, like a murderer. What's done is done. You've killed the person.
Hmm.
So there are other dilemmas you can do, but you can't...
Unkill that person?
Unkill the person. Of course, you could be on a... You know, in the process of killing them and stop, or, you know.
Only maim them a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, just not the same thing, is it? So, all right, I'm going to leave you with your other arm.
I'm not that bad a guy.
I've had a change of heart.
So. There's one more that I forgot about mentioning earlier, is that there's some smuggling where the smuggling is recognized by the government even though it's still illegal. Examples of this were Serbia back during the Bosnian-Serbia war,
right.
And North Korea currently, where the population largely survives on the black market. So even though the government knows about it, they still allow it to go on. Actually, for that matter, California now, with the decriminalization of marijuana. It's illegal to import it, but you don't get in trouble if you have it on you.
I didn't know they had one of those laws, because that's not really good. It's like what Japan did with child pornography, where they made it illegal to make, but not sell. There's a little gray area.
Right.
Yeah, it's not as good.
Yeah. So you're like, well, I think people are going to find a way around this. So maybe cut the child pornography thing.
I don't know. This episode, that's why not. We're going for a marathon on this one.
Well, that brings us to the end of Rogue Smugglers. So a pretty diverse group of scallywags, I would say. Except maybe scallywags doesn't mean that. What I think it means.
Pretty diverse group of rum runners.
Yeah, but that would be one thing.
Oh, so. All right.
Scum and villainy.
I was like, a pretty diverse group of rogues, but
that's the title of the episode.
Just repeating the So, but I think smugglers, unlike some criminals, can definitely, as Chris and Wayne were talking about, can definitely be very ideological, or as I was saying, very economic and money grubbing. And there's a lot that they can do. I mean, either working in a team. I mean, you have the vehicle aspect, or if we get into the fantastic and the technological, you can the equipment, the tools of the trade that they're using can be very, very diverse. And of course, it's very good and pretty exciting when things go wrong. So.
It always is.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or stream it through Stitcher or iTunes, or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can follow us on Twitter. You can also post on Facebook. We have a G+ community now that we can join up and be a part of. And we also have forums hosted by Happy Jacks. To access that, go to idleredhands.com/forums. Or you can always just send us an email at info@idleredhands.com. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye.
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 This is off air, but you sounded really happy about bringing up Numenera there, Wayne.
Sorry. Pretty much, I think anything we come up with would make Numenera better. So it wasn't Numenera. It was, hey, anybody could make that setting better. So anyway.
Drive through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week, and we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. DriveThruRPG, the one true source for RPGs.
Oh, Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.